to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. It is Thursday. It's beautiful outside. It's just, there's something about the summer that is just every day when it's nice out makes you feel better about the world. And looking out onto the sunny street of Waukesha, it's pretty great. And I am joined today by my new friend. I'm so excited to have you here. But my guest today, my guest co-host today, is Associate General Counsel and Assistant Corporate Secretary at Modine Manufacturing Company. Before her current role, she worked at Baird as a Senior VP and Associate General Counsel. She is also the founder of the Dreamer Next Door Incorporated and volunteers as a board member of the Association of Corporate Counsel and YWCA Southeast Wisconsin. She's also a double graduate from Marquette University, which we will not hold that against her. Please welcome my guest host for today, Isioma Wabuzar. Thank you for making time to spend 2 hours with us today.
Yes, I wouldn't spend it any other way. That's a lie, but I'm going to go with that.
Thank you for having me,
and I'm so happy to be here with you, Kristen.
I joke about Marquette because my parents both went to Madison, Wisconsin, or the University of Wisconsin, Madison, when the height of Al McGuire's years, and my dad played basketball for the Badgers. So I feel like I just grew up both in Madison and just having a implicit bias instilled in me by my parents towards Marquette. But I don't actually have anything against Marquette, and I know that it's a good school, and it's a proud part of Milwaukee. But you chose to go there twice, and so you must have enjoyed your undergrad.
Yes, they got a pretty penny out of me. I did go there. but we don't speak about the other schools, so, you know. But yes, Marquette is pretty solid, and so much love for all the Wisconsin institutions.
Yeah. It's always one of those things that I think it's a fun rivalry. And then as soon as you get, you know, it's like you're competing with, speaking from a Badger point of view, you compete with the Big Ten until the Big Ten's competing with the SEC, whatever. And so it's all fun and games because there's more serious things than to take sports too seriously. But
the Badgers is one thing that Wisconsin has on Marquette because we don't have football teams. So
do you have a baseball team?
Do we have a baseball team? I don't know. I think we have a baseball field. I don't know if we have a baseball team. I don't think we have a baseball team.
Because I was
don't
a big
me on that, though.
That's a big controversy. I think was it the early 90s when, because of Title IX, Badgers cut their men's baseball team because they needed to equal out the amount of varsity women's sports and men's sports. And I think, and what had happened, I think it was that year something happened with the men's soccer team where they're like, oh, we have to keep the soccer team. And that was like a big pivotal point. But anyways, we are getting off. I'm so excited to have you here because we met through me trying to collect more people to be video columnists at Journal Sentinel. And so we grabbed a drink and we just ran out of time because we were talking and we got along so well. And so I was like, you would be a good person to bring on the air with me. And so we have tons to talk about today. I wanted to start, as we were discussing yesterday, the different topical but interesting topics that we thought we had something to contribute to as far as hot takes, et cetera. One of the things that popped up that is not the happiest topic to start with, but was policing, the state of police, and it's their role in creating safer communities. And so you are someone who grew up in Milwaukee. For people who are listening, Isioma is Black, and so there is, being Black in Milwaukee is the city that is consistently considered one of the worst places to grow up Black. You have a very specific experience, I'm sure, both economically, the segregation, but also with police in Milwaukee. But, you know, there's multiple things that have been happening in the last, even this month. I mean, this week alone, there's been a pretty shocking video that came out of the Uvalde police and their lack of action during the school shooting that happened there. And they were checking their phones and putting, you know,
hand sanitizer on.
Yeah. And, pretty widely condemned nationally for what their cowardice in that situation. But that, I think, is in the bigger conversation because also this month we had another horrific shooting of an unarmed black man in Akron, Ohio, Jalen Walker, who it was a traffic stop and was hit 60 times and police put 90 rounds out. And then basically within the same week, they also, the different set of police, obviously, but the Highland Park gunman, Bobby Cremo, killed seven people and wounded dozens of others, but was able to be apprehended unharmed. And it's just, I understand that it's hard to be a police officer right now because there is under so much scrutiny, and yet there is such an inconsistency in how people are treated and how police are acting in these situations. And so what has been kind of your reaction as these stories pop up, especially as we are two plus years out since George Floyd was murdered? What has kind of been your reaction or your community's reaction in your friend group?
So I do also want to mention, so you mentioned Jalen Walker, I believe is his last name. You know, we had another incident in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I believe it was back in April with Patrick Loyoya, an unarmed black man being shot and killed by Grand Rapids police officers. Now, I want to be clear that my position isn't because Jalen Walker was shot or because Patrick was shot that the Uvalde shooter should have been shot. You know, my position, and I think the position of my community, black people are not a monolith. My friends and I are not a monolith. But I think generally speaking is that if police forces can rationalize enough in the moment for a domestic terrorist to walk away with their life, they can do that for everyone else, particularly unarmed black men. Now, police do shoot unarmed people. They don't shoot unarmed people more than they do armed people. So, you know, I think to honor the conversation, right, we have to be truthful in what we're saying. So it's not like, you know, most of the people police shoot are unarmed. That's certainly not the case. The issue is that when it comes to unarmed people that are killed at the hands of police, it's disproportionately black people. Right. And those, I think, seven times as much a black man, an unarmed black man, is likely to be shot and killed by police than his white counterpart. And when you look up at portion of the population we comprise, right, I think African-Americans comprise less than 13% of the population. Those statistics tell you alone there's something else at play. It's not simply people with a perceived gun. It's not, you know, you made a wrong move. It's not that you're not complying. There's something else at play, and there's this implicit bias. And I think now, you know, when right off the tail of George Floyd, there was this defund the police sort of conversation happening. I think that nomenclature ruffled a lot of feathers, and I think now the conversation is, or what it at least should be, is how do we reallocate so much of the time and energy and resources we put into police, which in these instances prove to be a reactive service, right, into resources and things that are more proactive, right? And how do police forces interplay with that? And so I think that's a conversation at hand. What I do think is a bit disheartening is that post George Floyd, a lot of this momentum has slowed down. And so I would like to see some of that ramp up again.
And what do you attribute? Was it exhaustion? Was it what? Why do you think the momentum did slow down? Because it was so intense, and it wasn't just with the defund policing, but it was also the amount of companies trying to, you know, strengthen their diversity, their inclusion programs, and their hiring practices, and all of this different real potential sentiment that maybe things will be different this time. And is it just in the wake of the news cycle that just constantly distracts us into the next thing, whether it's COVID or inflation or January 6th, or, you know, is it because we have short attention spans, or is it just that the energy isn't there?
I think it's all of those things, right? I do think there was a level of exhaustion, even amongst my white friends. Like, let's be honest, we all have friends of different backgrounds, different demographics. That sort of white guilt started to creep in. And I think for even amongst my white friends, there was a element of, I'm just tired of feeling this way. I'm tired of talking. I mean well. I want to do well. I don't know how to do well. But I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I'm tired of feeling this way. I think Black people are continuously tired in society. It's always a new plight for us. It's always something. And so there's the exhaustion there. Aside from, and I think the particular burden on Black people is that while simultaneously advocating for our community, which I think is a unique burden that not all demographics share, you have to advocate for yourself as an individual. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to get through the day. Meanwhile, we have our community on our back and on our shoulders. And then I think to your latter point, the constant news cycle, I think excuse how candid I am, we are kind of sheep now. There's a lot of groupthink. The media tells us what to care about. And quite honestly, it's hard to be an American right now. It's really, really, really hard to be. There's always something going on. And, it's hard to sort of allocate how much care and how much time you put into different issues, particularly when I think there's a huge segment of the American population that feels relatively hopeless and helpless.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that necessarily is a party affiliation, a cultural or race affiliation. I think in general, people are exhausted. The last couple years have been, I mean, really, as well, because we're both millennials, really, our entire adulthood has been exhausting, right? Like,
this, right.
We've gone through a lot as far as public mainstream events that have shaped the world. But all right, well, when we come back, I want to center a little bit more, keep talking about policing, but center a little bit more on Milwaukee, which is where both of us live, and some of the new efforts by Mayor Johnson to try to reconcile some of the community policing lack thereof that there's been recently, and get your opinion on where we can go from here. But this is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, and we'll be back in just a minute.